Welcome. This is Cascade Church Portland's podcast. We exist to invite all people to join us as we follow Jesus together in bringing heaven to earth. Let's look today at Genesis 25. We're going to look at a story of forgiveness in the Bible, a pretty well-known one. Just to give some of the backdrop of the story, you have this creation story about how the world begins. You have Noah. You have the calling of Abraham. Now, the calling of Abraham is incredibly important because this is the beginning of the Israelite nation, the Jewish people. Now, the promise to Abraham is, I'm going to bless those who bless you. And God's blessing will be known throughout the entire world through Abraham. And God says, I will make a great nation from you. The only issue is he hits about 90, and him and his wife Sarah have exactly zero kids. So it's a little hard to believe a whole nation is coming. But God is faithful in the promise. They have their son Isaac. So we're looking today at Jacob and Esau, which are Isaac's kids. We're really early in this developing nation. So these stories are significant because they're trying to shine a light on what kind of people are God's people called to be? Who are they called to be and how are they called to act? Jacob and Esau are twins, and their names are a lot of fun. Esau is born first with a shock of red hair, and his name means red. And then Jacob is born just after him, grabbing on to Esau's heel. His name translates to heel grabber, which is great because if you know anybody named Jacob, use that often when you talk to them. This name would have been a nickname during that time of the deceptive one. So it's a fun name. It sounds great. Jacob does great things, but ultimately heel grabber. So this comes when they get a little bit older because Esau is born just a few moments before Jacob as twins. There's this system and law, the way the world works is the eldest son takes the inheritance. So he has the birthright. He takes over when the father passes away. His family, his farm, his livestock, his property, all of this gets transferred over to the first son who cares for it for the rest of the family. So once, when Jacob was cooking some stew, Esau came in from the open country famished. He said to Jacob, quick, let me have some of that red stew. I'm famished. Jacob replied, first, sell me your birthright. Ever the opportunist, right? So he's hungry, and he's utilizing this moment of temporary feeling famished, starving, instead of helping out his brother to hold it over his brother's head. Look, I'm about to die, Esau said. What good is a birthright to me? But Jacob said, swear it to me first. So he swore an oath to him, selling his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau some bread and some lentil stew. He ate and he drank. And then they got up and left. So this is one of the first stories that we see about these two brothers. By the way, as we go through this, the main kind of point of going through this is if you think your family's dysfunctional, that's why we look at these stories in the Bible. So he takes this moment of weakness and opportunity and takes his birthright from him. The story continues. We're going to look here in 27:41 that there's another situation where it's the end of Isaac's life. He's going to give his blessing to his sons. So he tells Esau, who he's going to give the blessing to, go out and catch me, I don't know, maybe a monkey. Go catch me some food, cook it into a stew, bring it to me the way I like it. While he's gone, Isaac's wife pulls aside Jacob and says, here, put some goat skin on your arms, put on your brother's clothes so you smell like him. We'll make the stew, you'll bring it in, and you can take his birthright from him, which Jacob does. So in Genesis 27, two chapters later, in verse 41, it says, Esau held a grudge against Jacob because of the blessing his father had given him. He said to himself, the days of mourning for my father are near. Then I will kill my brother, Jacob, which is it's like a death vow in any good movie, right? Like, I will kill him. He's already given up the birthright, and this time there's greater levels of deception that Jacob utilizes along with his mother. Esau hates him, swears he's going to kill him, so Jacob has to run away. He leaves his family for a very, very long time. The story gets even more interesting. He goes to see Laban. He works for a long time, gets tricked into marrying one sister he doesn't want to marry, then marries another sister because polygamy. And then they go and they have livestock and family, this great thing. They come back into the land years and years later. So the story left off with, I'm going to kill him. Esau's going to kill Jacob. He's coming back years and years later. This is their last memory together. This is their last moment together. And earlier in the story, I encourage you to read all of it. But Jacob sends a bunch of livestock ahead of him. Like, hey, servants, go take these to Esau and be like, hey, you know, kids just being kids. Here's a bunch of lambs. And it says, yeah, he totally took all those things. And he's coming with 400 men towards you. So Jacob, ever the crafty one, divides his family in two because he's like, well, if they come and attack one, I'll just run away with the other one. And he goes to face his brother Esau. And this is the scene. This is in verse 33. But Esau ran to meet Jacob and embraced him. He threw his arms around his neck and kissed him, and they wept. Esau didn't suffer from face blindness. He didn't forget who his brother was. He knows who he is. He knows the thing that's been done for him. He didn't get struck in the head with a rock and kind of forget about all of it. What we see here is this incredible demonstration of forgiveness. But what we want to pull back and look at is to say, but what is forgiveness and what isn't forgiveness? And what are some things that may have been the right thing for Jacob to do in this situation and story? And what are some things that we don't just apply this story and this precedent to every relationship and every place? And if you've ever been seriously harmed or wounded, people say, well, you know, Esau forgave Jacob. So what are some dynamics that are important to note? The first that we want to look at is, one, Jacob never asked for forgiveness. If you go through the story, he runs away, he has his whole life, and then he tries to bribe his brother. But he never says, when he sends all the livestock ahead, hey, I'm sorry about that whole stealing your birthright and your blessing thing from our dying father. That never happens. The second thing to note is Esau would have been justified in his anger. If Esau had come forward in that last thing and had killed his brother, you would say that's pretty barbaric, but at least he's a man of his word, right? I mean, he said he was going to kill him. He follows through on promises. He's justified. The thing that Jacob has done to him throughout the years is awful. We would all agree that's incredibly deceptive to take something from your family. And the further wounding for Esau to feel that, and mom was in on it. This wasn't just something that your brother had done to steal and take for something that was rightfully yours. And sometimes we get so stuck on the birthright, we're focused on things. Think about how this corrupted and forever put this awful memory over your last moments with your father. What Jacob has taken from Esau is so much more than just a birthright. The levels of betrayal. What was Esau's capability to trust people going forward? All of these things are incredibly compromised. So when Esau runs up and hugs Jacob, he would be just as justified to throw punches or to launch a war against him. It wasn't that all those awful things didn't happen or that Esau was wrong or he misremembered it. He's right. And what happened is awful. The reason why we bring that up is here's what we want to talk about. When we look at forgiveness, we want to talk today about what forgiveness isn't. There's a lot of things that we can attach to forgiveness that we want to detach. We want to say it's not the same thing. And then we want to look at what forgiveness is. But this message series comes in a flow. So let's talk about the flow quickly, just so we're in the same place. Last week, when we talked about forgiveness, we said forgiveness is the last step on a process of healing. We don't lead with forgiveness. We don't say, I forgive you at the beginning without acknowledging the hurt, the wounding, without experiencing anger, without getting in touch of how things went so wrong, without getting in touch with the injustice of whatever the thing is that happened, and without mourning. We talked last week. The things that we need to forgive others for, there's a relationship, there's a reality, there's a way that the world was supposed to go, the trajectory was heading, that we have to put in the grave. It's gone now. And we have to mourn that. We have to recognize the loss and we have to mourn it. So when we talk about forgiveness today, forgiveness is the end result of healing. Forgiveness doesn't mean healing. Lots of people have said, no, I've forgiven them, but they haven't ever healed from the wound. They haven't looked at what the wound is. They haven't felt it and experienced it and mourned it. They've just slapped a name or a label or a Band-Aid on a gunshot wound. That is not what the people of God are called to do. This isn't health. This isn't awareness. This isn't anything. Jesus isn't calling us to do things in our lives. God didn't create us to go around to be hurt and wounded and just to pretend it didn't happen. That's insanity, not Christianity. So what we're called to do first is to walk this process of healing and face it. This is the metaphor we've used before that helps me. Your life is a house. And when we have been hurt, when we have been wrong, when our trust has been betrayed by others, anger and sadness and mourning, they come knocking on our door. Our role is to open the door and acknowledge them. It's not to open the door, acknowledge them, and let them hang out in our guest bedroom for the next 5 to 10 years. So how do we acknowledge the hurt, the pain, all of the things that happen, but say, but there's a path, there's a reality, there's a thing that I could hold on to that I am choosing not to hold on to, not for their benefit, but for the freedom that God has called me to. Here's the second thing. When we talk about forgiveness, it's that kind of release. It's that kind of letting go. It's that walking and choosing a path of freedom. It's not necessarily reconciliation. Reconciliation is when you restore the relationship. There's been a hurt, there's been a pain, there's been a trauma, and you come back together to restore the relationship and continue moving forward. We would say that is not, we don't want to equate the two. I can forgive someone and not be in intimate relationship with them again. And oftentimes, we shouldn't be in intimate relationship with them again if there isn't a clear demonstration of repentance. And if there isn't more than just an intention to be repentant, but an actual demonstration that behaviors, thought process, that they've done their own processing to recognize the hurt, the pain that they have created, and to change their path and trajectory. So we forgive to release. Reconciliation's a different conversation. And guess what? Coming next week to a church near you, Cascade Church, we'll be talking about reconciliation next week. So I hope that's an interesting conversation. Otherwise, I just cut attendance in half. All right, let's look at what forgiveness isn't, shall we? Forgiveness isn't accepting the blame or being wrong. And we'll put wrong in quotes there. A lot of times to offer forgiveness, we feel like we have to accept the blame. That really, there's probably something I did. Now, with that said, there's a lot of times that I'm sure you've sat down and you've talked with people. And there's many times where I've sat down and I've heard people's experience of being wronged and what someone did to them that was so painful and hurtful. And a lot of times while I'm sitting down and listening to them, I can also hear in my head what it would be like to sit down and listen to the other person they're talking about. And the reason why that's interesting is because I can hear this and I can agree, yes, this thing was awful. I can also think about sitting with that person and being like, yeah, your experience, it sounds really hard. It sounds really difficult. Now, there are clearly some exceptions where that is this, they might have a rationale or a reason why they did it, and it is hiding and false and wrong. A lot of times in our situations of forgiveness, life and relationships and people are complicated. If you ever have in your head, that was all their fault, or that was all my fault, I would say it doesn't seem to bear true with how life works or how people operate. Now, so when we offer forgiveness, it's not saying, well, it's either their fault or my fault. I guess I need to take it as my fault, and that's how we repair the relationship. We can offer forgiveness and not say, well, it was my fault, or I need to take the blame here. I don't know how many of you have done this, but you're having a fight, you're having a disagreement, you're in a relationship with someone, you're like, well, time to take all the blame. That doesn't help and serve anyone. And it gets you no closer to understanding what actually happened. You can feel like, well, it's the step of humility I need to take as a Christian man or a Christian woman to repair this relationship. No, I can see in my mind's eye, Jesus is up in heaven going like, what are you doing? I didn't ask you to do that. Why would I ask you just to take all the blame? It doesn't make any sense. Now, we don't show back up in the relationship and saying, now I'm willing to be here and offer some forgiveness, but I have terms. This is what was my fault, but can we both agree this is what was your fault? We come in and we understand this is the role that I played, but my forgiveness in it is letting go of the right to bring that thing up, to hold on to my rightness in the way that I was wronged. But we don't have to fall in this absolute, this either or, where it's all my fault or it's all your fault. It's good to step back and recognize that's not how the world works, even though we like to think in those terms because it's simpler and it's easier and it's clearer. But it's not truer. Second thing, forgiveness isn't waiting to receive an apology. So how many times have you like, I was wronged, I was hurt, and you know what? I'm ready to offer forgiveness. All they have to do is show up and say they're sorry, and I'll fully offer it to them. That's like taking yourself hostage. And here's what I mean by that. When you say, like, I'll offer that forgiveness, if we think of it in the paradigm that forgiveness is letting go and finding freedom, I will offer forgiveness. I'll set myself free when they apologize. Why would you do that? Why would you wait for that? And especially if you've lived any amount of life, how often does that happen? 2%? I mean, that feels generous that they come back and be like, I was praying and really searching my soul and I realized how wrong I've been to you. I was able to think of your perspective and how you would feel, and that was really awful. It doesn't happen. And it's holding ourselves prisoner. It's holding ourselves hostage for something that's unlikely to happen. And here's the other side of it too. When the 2% does happen, it's so much better to receive it as unexpected grace instead of finally. Where have you been? What took you so long? When we've surrendered and let it go, and then they come back and apologize, you're like, oh, this is amazing. Thanks. Instead of, what took you so long? If you're able to say what took you so long, you were holding yourself hostage. This was not torturing the other person. They were not leaving a tortured existence because you were withholding your forgiveness. You were. You were miserable. They were skipping, probably in a field or meadow somewhere, just blissfully unaware of how it impacted you. So how do we understand this forgiveness and not waiting for an apology? Because again, we're not talking about reconciliation. We're not talking about coming back and being best friends or being back to the way it used to be. We're talking about letting go. Forgiveness isn't forgetting. Have you heard that? Time to forgive and forget. Forgetting, if people want you to forget what happened, they're not asking for forgiveness. They're asking for permission. I'm going to say that again. If someone wants you to forget what happened, they're not asking for forgiveness. They're asking for permission to do it again, to harm you again. We don't wipe our slate clean and forget about all the things that happened. The reason why it's awesome to be older is because you have more life experiences. You have more things. Life has taught you more. If you are actively wiping that clean from your memory, you're doing an incredible disservice to yourself. We don't have to be bitter from our experiences. We don't have to become this incredibly distrusting, like everyone's out there probably to hurt me. But we don't just clear our mind, pretend it didn't happen. And why? Because it doesn't work anyway. Anyone who said, I don't know, I forgot about that. No, you didn't. It's still in there. It doesn't go away because you've decided that you forgot about it. It's still there. And the way to keep it from doing damage in there is to acknowledge it's there and look at it in the eyes and say, but I'm going to choose to move forward with my own life anyway. Don't forget, Christianity isn't, God's not calling you to amnesia. God's not calling you to forget all these things and somehow you're a better forgiver if you do that. That's insane. You can remember what happened and you can choose to lay down arms anyway. I'm not going to come back and do this big revenge act. I'm not going to come and hold this against you. I'm not going to hold it over your head. I can remember and I can choose to let go. And last, and this is where we talked about forgiveness and reconciliation, but it's not picking back up where you left off. When you offer forgiveness, if we're not forgetting, we don't say, well, I've forgiven you, so it means we got to jump back in to where our relationship was beforehand. And we talk a lot about relationship because, just to reiterate, forgiveness is about people. It's nearly impossible to forgive systems. Systems do incredibly awful things. It's almost impossible to forgive a system. We can forgive people, so it's personal, it's relational. We don't go back to the way things were. We utilize the experience not as a weapon against the other person, but it's informing the ways that we move forward in relationship. Let me give you an example. How many of you have ever had a puppy? How many of you have ever replaced your carpet because you had a puppy? You know what I mean? So puppies, I mean, I don't know what they're doing. They're adorable, and that's why we let them just get away with defecating everywhere all throughout our house as they figure it out. If you have a dog and they've done that and you put them outside and they look really sad and pitiful, you don't just let them back into the carpet to hang out in there. If they do it enough times, you establish some rules. You get to stay on the hardwood. You get to stay on the linoleum. Like, that's your spot over here. You will always be in the spot with the piddle pad. Why? Because we don't wipe our slate clean. We don't go back to the relationship with the puppy like before they were defecating all over our floors. This is going to be the best leap we've ever made as a church. Are you ready to go with me? You have a bunch of puppies in your life defecating all over the floors of your life. Stop going back to the time before they did it. It doesn't mean you sever the relationship. It doesn't mean you rub their nose in it. It doesn't mean you get vengeful or spiteful, but the way that the relationship moves forward looks different. Are you with me? We remember it, and we don't just go back to the way things used to be. And sometimes, for our own safety, health, well-being, and honestly, for the healthy, safe, and well-being for the other person, we sever that relationship completely. We just don't have contact with them any longer. There are things that have happened to you that necessitate that. Doing that is not being unforgiving, unchristian, unloving, any of those things. It's being incredibly loving, but guess what? Sometimes in Christianity, the love you need to extend is to yourself. The love you extended to yourself and understanding that is really a love of acceptance of the love and the way that God sees you, and it's the fuel that leads us to actually love others. God's not calling us to be victims of abuse. This is not the gospel. This isn't what Jesus was talking about when he said, turn the other cheek. We talked a lot about what it isn't. And the reason for that is we want to address some of the ways that our understanding of forgiveness gets warped and leads us back into these patterns of abuse or pain or damage. But let's talk about what it is. Think of the monkey. Forgiveness is laying down arms for the sake of freedom. When I say laying down arms, and we talked about this a bit, when you have been wronged in harm, it's odd to think of that as a power. But it is. It shifts a degree of the power in the relationship. When someone has wronged you, you have rights against them to hold that against them forever. And a lot of times when people are married and they have fights, this is where we discover the places we have not laid down arms, right? We have a fight, we have a conversation about this, but then we can also discover the backlog of events where arms didn't get laid down because we've held on to these memories. We've held on to these things that things have been used against us. Why do we hold on to them? because they might be valuable someday down the road. Because it hurts the other person to say, and these are the things you've done that have been painful or hurtful to me. Forgiveness is I'm laying down arms. I have a right to be angry. I am justified in my pain. I'm justified in my hurt and my anger. But I'm not going to keep this cycle of fighting and violence and hurt and pain and just keep it right on rolling. This is what Jesus is calling and inviting us to. I want to take a zoom out step for a second. What do we call Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John? What? The Gospels. Gospel means good news. Now, Christianity, Jesus didn't invent gospel language. The good news was used by the Caesars, the Roman leaders. And they used it to say, do you want to know why these people have a boot to your throat? Because they're special, super special. We should respect them and follow them and listen to them and hear the incredible stories about how they were born and how they came up and all the amazing feats that they've done in life. Why did the Caesars, why did they deserve the respect of the people and the submission of the people? Because they were amazing, and these were all the amazing things that they do, and they were going to keep you safe through military force. They were going to go out and kill the people that would kill you. Now, in this environment comes the gospel, the good news of Jesus. What's so striking about the gospel of Jesus? This is why Jesus is incredible, and he's going the other direction. Jesus was being actively asked and encouraged and pushed and cajoled into violence. Lead an uprising. We just want the good guys to win. Fight and kill people so the Israelites can win. And Jesus was saying, enough. Enough. This solves nothing. Keeping this loop solves nothing. We're not just waiting for the leader that will have the biggest military, the biggest force, can kill the most bad people. Enough. We're going another direction because life and freedom and truth is found through surrendering arms. Letting go. Were the Israelites justified in their anger towards the Roman Empire? Yep. Uh-huh. It wasn't their choice to be part of the Roman Empire. They didn't want to be dominated by military force and held in line by Roman centurions. They were right and they let go. Jesus was calling them to let go of arms. Why? For themselves. The Israelite people were spiraling a path that was destructive and damaging for them because they were obsessed with winning. They were obsessed with righting the wrongs done to them by doing more wrongs to the bad people. Enough. And so, on a microcosm, this is the invitation for us to, why do we forgive? Not because you're wrong, not because you did it wrong, not because God wants a path of abuse and cycles of violence and we have been called to be the world's doormats. No. The fact that we would even think in those terms of being the world's doormats is because we only think in the world is the winners and the losers. What if there's another way? What if there's another path? What if the best that could be brought out in you and the world is found in laying down arms? You're right, what they did was awful. But let's not do the same sin that was done to you. We let it go so we can see the love of God be known and shown and experienced by us and known to the whole world. Let's pray. God, it would be foolish to assume that the message of forgiveness is an easy one. God, the situations that demand forgiveness are painful. And God, violent, abusive, awful things have been done to people in this room. God, I pray for those of us who we have not gone through the hurt, we haven't experienced the anger, we haven't gone through the mourning of the kind of relationship or the way our life would move forward. that we would go to that place. We would acknowledge the hurt and the pain of what has happened to us. And God, for those of us who have been nursing revenge, believing that we hold on to the wrongs done to us so that we could have power over another, that God, we would find the freedom offered in laying down arms. God, I see the picture of Esau running towards Jacob and hugging him. God, we hear in the story from Jacob's perspective that he had so much anxiety and fear for how his brother would receive him, that God, he was in a prison of his own wrongs for years. And in the story, we see Esau running free. God, I pray that we would be Esau's. We would be free. God, we would be whole. And God, we would be people who can lay down arms to find the freedom you offer. It's in your name we pray. Amen.